Lost Horizon by James Hilton. Geoffrey Matthews reads the third of 10 episodes.
In the spring of 1931, whilst being evacuated by air from a trouble spot in North India, consular official Hugh Conway and his three fellow passengers found themselves in the hands of an armed pilot they'd never seen before. He flew the plane far into the remotest mountains of Tibet, where after a crash landing, he died. Then the four stranded people saw that they were not alone. On a glittering peak across a valley, a party of men were coming towards them, carrying a hooded chair. As the procession drew nearer, Conway left his own party and walked towards them, though not hurriedly, for he knew that Orientals enjoy the ritual of meeting and like to take their time over it. Halting when a few yards off, he bowed with due courtesy. A robed figure stepped from the chair, came forward with dignified deliberation, and held out his hand. Conway responded, observing that the man was an elderly Chinese, grey-haired, clean-shaven, and wearing a silk-embroidered gown.
"I am from the Lamasery of Shangri-La," he said.
Conway bowed again and explained the circumstances that had brought him and his three companions to such an unfrequented part of the world.
"It is indeed a remarkable story," said the Chinese. "We will see to your plane and the dead pilot. My name is Chang. If you would be so good as to present me to your friends."
Conway turned to the others, who were regarding this encounter with varying degrees of astonishment. "Miss Brinklow, LMS, London Missionary Service, Mr. Barnard, who is an American, Mr. Mallinson, and my own name is Conway. We're British Consular Service. We're all glad to see you. Indeed, we were just about to make our way to your lamasery, if you could give us directions for the journey."
"There is no need for that," said Chang. "I shall be delighted to act as your guide."
"Our stay won't be long," said Mallinson. "We shall pay for anything we have, and we should like to hire some of your men to help us on our journey back. We want to return to civilization as soon as possible."
The Chinese bowed and returned to his chair.
The journey to Shangri-La was begun.
All morning the climb proceeded slowly and by easy gradients, but at such height physical effort was considerable, and nobody had the energy to spare for talk. About a couple of miles along the valley, the ascent grew steeper, and by this time the sun was overclouded, and a silvery mist obscured the view. Thunder and avalanches resounded from the snow fields above. The air became chill, and then, with the sudden changefulness of mountain regions, bitterly cold. Shortly afterwards, the party halted, and the Tibetans began uncoiling ropes and linking the party together in mountaineering fashion. But the next stage, though occasionally exciting, was less arduous than might have been expected. The track consisted of a cut along the flank of a rock wall. Mercifully, the mist obscured both the height of the rock above them and the depth of the abyss on the other side. The path was scarcely more than 2 feet wide in places. After a while, it started to turn downhill at first, gently, then more sharply. At one spot, Conway found some edelweiss. But when he showed it to the others, Mallinson said,
"Good heavens, Conway, you fancy you're pottering about the Alps? What sort of devil's kitchen are we making for?"
"If you'd been through the war, as I have," said Conway, "you'd realize there are times when the most comfortable thing is to do nothing at all. Things happen to you and you just let them happen."
"I'm afraid I don't find it as easy as you do to accept the situation," said Mallinson.
The ground levelled out, and the party stepped from the mist into clear, sunny air. Ahead, and only a short distance away, lay the lamasery of Shangri-La. To Conway it might have been a vision. It was indeed a strange sight. A group of coloured pavilions clung to the mountainside with the chance delicacy
of a flower petal. Above them rose a grey rock bastion, and beyond that, in a dazzling pyramid, soared the snow slopes of a tremendous mountain. Below the pavilions, the mountain wall continued to drop, almost sheer to the valley. The floor of the valley, hazily distant, welcomed the eye with greenness. Sheltered from winds and surveyed by the lamasry, it looked to Conway a delightfully favoured place. He never remembered exactly how he and the others arrived at the lamasry. That thin air had a dreamlike texture, and he only vaguely recollected surprise at finding the interior spacious, well-warmed, and quite clean. But there was no time to do more than notice these things, for the Chinese, Chang, had left his chair and was already leading the party through various antechambers.
"I will show you to your apartments," he said. "No doubt you would like baths. Our accommodation is simple, but I hope adequate. Afterwards, I shall be greatly honored if you'll all join me at dinner."
"And then, if you don't mind," said Marinson, "we'll make our plans of getting away. The sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned."
The appointments of Shangri-La proved to be all that any of them could have wished, certainly more than they expected. That a Tibetan monastery should possess a system of central heating was perhaps surprising enough, but it was the combination of Western and Eastern that struck Conway as most odd. The bath, for instance, was of a delicate green porcelain, a product, according to the inscription, of Akron, Ohio. Yet he was attended by a valet in Chinese fashion. His ears and nostrils were cleansed, and a thin silk swab passed under his lower eyelids. The four passengers met again at dinner. The room in which Chang received them was admirably proportioned and sparingly adorned with tapestries and one or two fine pieces of lacquer. Light was from paper lanterns, motionless in the still air. The meal was an excellent one of Chinese food, beautifully prepared and meticulously served. They were all hungry and ate well. Afterwards, Conway lit a cigarette. "You seem a very fortunate community," he said to Chang. "You're certainly very hospitable to strangers. I don't imagine, though, that you receive them often."
"Seldom, indeed, Mr. Conway. It is not a travelled part of the world."
"You put the matter mildly. It seemed to me as I came the most isolated spot I ever set eyes on."
"A separate culture might flourish here without contamination from the outside world. And what do you understand by contamination, Mr. Conway?"
"Oh, dance bands, cinemas, sky signs. Your plumbing is quite rightly as modern as you can get it, the only certain boon to my mind that the East can take from the West. I often think that the Romans are fortunate. Their civilization reached as far as hot baths without touching the fatal knowledge of machinery."
Miss Brinklow interrupted him. "Please, will you tell us about the monastery?" she said. "As a missionary, I am interested in the religious organization of your community."
"Those of us in full lamahood number about 50, said Chang. "There are a few others like myself who have not yet attained complete initiation. We are half lamas."
"I see. Thank you," said Miss Brinklow. "Tell me, what do you all believe in?"
"Isn't that rather a big question?" said Conway. "But I must admit that I share Miss Brinklow's curiosity."
"If I were to put it into a very few words, my dear sir," said Chang, "I should say that our prevalent belief is in moderation. We preach the virtue of avoiding excess of all kinds. In the valley which you have seen, several thousand inhabitants live under our order, and we have found that this principle makes for a very considerable degree of happiness."
"All this is very interesting," said Mallinson, "but I really think it's time we began to discuss our plans for getting away. We want to return to India as soon as possible. How many porters can we be supplied with?"
For a long moment, Chang did not answer. Then he said,
Unfortunately, Mr. Mallinson, I hardly think the matter could be arranged immediately.
But something has got to be arranged. Our friends and relatives will be worrying about us. We should like to set out not later than tomorrow. Presumably, some of your people could escort us. We should make it well worth their while, of course. And it will be a good idea to send messages ahead. How far away is the nearest radio station or telegraph line?
Chang's wrinkled face seemed to have acquired a look of infinite patience, but he didn't reply.
Well, where do you send to when you want anything?
Once again, his question was met with silence. Suddenly, Mallinson thrust back his chair.
I don't feel that any of you are really trying to help me. I'm only asking a simple question. When you had all these modern baths installed, how did they get here?
You won't tell me. It's part of the general mystery, I suppose. Conway, why don't you get at the truth?
Conway felt himself waking from a trance.
I think we'd all better adjourn this discussion till tomorrow. Bernard, will you look after Mallinson? He's all in. And I'm sure you're in need of sleep too, Miss Brinklow. I shall follow you soon. Good night.
He hustled them out of the room and turned to his host.
No, sir, I don't want to detain you long, so I'd better come to the point. My friend is impetuous, but he's quite right to make things clear. Our return journey has to be arranged, and we can't do it without help from you. Now, I'm not suggesting that we leave tomorrow.
These things obviously take time, but will you tell me how soon you can let us have porters?
Well, my dear sir, I very much doubt whether you will easily find men willing to undertake such a journey. They have their homes in the valley, and they don't care to leave them for long and arduous trips outside.
They can be prevailed upon to do so, though, can't they? Said Conway. Weren't you setting out on a journey when we met you this morning?
There was no response to this.
Then a sudden, incredible thought struck him. I understand.
So it was not a chance meeting. You came there deliberately to intercept us. You must have known of our arrival beforehand.
But the question is, my dear Chang, the question is, how?
For a moment, as Conway stared into the eyes of the Lama, he knew that he had stumbled onto the most significant aspect so far of their strange adventure.
You are clever, Chang said, but not entirely correct. For that reason, I should advise you not to worry your friends with your speculations. Believe me, neither you nor they are in any danger at Shangri-La.
That was Episode 3 of Lost Horizon by James Hilton. It was read by Jeffrey Matthews.